This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT. I'm Jennifer Staten. Tonight could be a very late night or early morning for the Austin Independent School District Board of Trustees. They are scheduled to vote on moving forward with plans to close and consolidate some schools. The district says it wants all students to attend schools with updated facilities and robust programs, and that this is the way to get there. But some school board members say the district's moving too fast and have shared concerns from constituents that under-enrolled East Austin schools would bear the brunt of the closures. There are really practical elements to school closures and really emotional elements, too. A beloved school can sometimes be the heart of a neighborhood. I talked recently with the district's chief officer for school leadership, Michelle Cavazos, about all of this. She started by explaining why the district insists closures and consolidations must happen.
As these different people are moving to our city, there more are coming that do not have children or school-age children. So we have declined in our enrollment by almost just around 7,000 students over the last several years and projected to continue to decrease in enrollment. For families, especially those starting out who typically have younger children, affordability-wise, it's very expensive to live in Austin. And so more of our families have been moving more to the outskirts where housing is more affordable for families and beginning families.
What we seem to hear a lot of about also is recapture, and that AISD is really hamstrung by the recapture system and having to send hundreds of millions of dollars back to the state every year. Now, the legislature is talking about changing that system. If recapture were to change, would AISD still have to be looking at closing and consolidating schools?
That would most definitely help, but we would still need to be looking at how do we create the best 21st century learning environments for our students, because that's really the driver, a big driver of this.
How will the district decide which schools will be closed?
We'll be looking at one objective criteria, like what's the deferred maintenance on a facility? And we'll be looking at every single one of our facilities. We're considering really this regional scenario and looking at the academic programming within those regions and seeing what's there, what's available, what's missing, and what can we add, and where do we add that so that families and the community as a whole have access to all of our programming within an area that's as close to home as possible.
So it sounds like that actually the enrollment numbers, from what you're saying, are not going to necessarily play a part in deciding which schools are going to be closed.
Correct. That will not be the only criteria. It will be an element as we look at all of the objective data. So it'll be a piece, but it will not be the only deciding factor, because we may have some sites that are under-enrolled that cost less to maintain than other sites.
How many schools overall does the district believe that it will need to close?
I know that there's, we'd put out a number, I think we'd said maybe 12 to 14, but really at this point in time, we don't have a specific number that we'll be looking at. It's really looking at the objective criteria and then bringing in some of the guiding principles around equity and access to help us with our decision making.
Is redrawing any school boundaries part of this scene?
It may be a piece of it as well. Because as we look at these regional scenarios, it may be, and we look at an equity lens as well. And what all will we be looking at with that equity? Is it financial? Is it ethnically? Is it programming? And really, that big piece of it is the academic programming that students and families have access to.
What is the district going to implement to get community input?
Through each stage or phase of the process, there is community engagement. We want to engage the community early and often. There'll be opportunities virtually as well as face-to-face. These are emotional decisions.
There may be decisions the district has to make that a large parent population is not going to like. Does the will exist to do that?
I think we are at a point where there is a really strong will. That's why it's very key to have a very clearly defined process with community engagement throughout, so that at the end, when we get to our end result, if we've followed that process, there'll be people that are really happy and others that are not as happy with the outcome. But if we've followed a process that we've all agreed on, we'll be able to make those decisions and work through them and support families and communities through those changes.
What is the timeline for making these decisions and then starting the implementation of closures and consolidations?
Well, the timeline is kind of started in the fall when we just started really kind of discussing it and putting it out there. And then as far as naming, you know, campuses that will be impacted either by receiving students or that will be vacated from students, it's between August and October of this year. And then that gives enough time for the community and engagement between now and then. And then during the whole next school year to work with families and support them through that transition, as well as ensuring that the facilities that they will be going to are ready and prepared to receive everyone.
Can it be done that quickly?
Yes, actually. So it does seem fast. But in working with our facilities team, they said, as long as we have, if we know by October-ish at the latest, which campuses would be impacted, that gives them enough lead time to work through the remainder of the year and then that following summer to have impacted campuses ready to welcome students and families that following fall.
So how does all of this planning interact with the most recent bond? What if bond money was approved for a campus that then is decided to be closed?
There's still, as part of the bond package, there is the ability to be able to use those funds to modernize any of our facilities.
What is the anticipated impact of all of this on district faculty and school staff? I mean, it sounds like if you're going from more schools to fewer schools, that would be staff reductions?
Actually, as far as teaching staff, they would just be really moving with their kids to any impacted sites. It will require less administrative kind of costs at each campus. So currently, every campus has a principal and then either a full-time or some part-time assistant principals. So there'd be a reduction in those in the administrative end. But as far as teachers, for the most part, they're really shifting to new sites. And then our attrition rate through each year really will capture any reductions that there might be because there'd be fewer sites.
What about custodial staff or cafeteria staff or other sort of campus and facilities-based staff?
Mm-hmm. It'd be the same through attrition. So nobody would be losing their positions. They would be going to different sites.
How will the district decide which schools get which enhanced programming?
That'll be part of the looking at the regional kind of scenarios and seeing what already exists in those spaces and what doesn't. And then determining what is that'll be another deciding factor in which schools are consolidated into because of what does the physical space look like to welcome, creative arts, you know, if that's a programming that or STEM or STEAM, you know, what's the physical space need to look like for that?
Michelle Cavazos is Chief Officer for School Leadership for the Austin Independent School District. Michelle, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.